If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Felix Club. This is the show where we talk with people from around the world about the news from the past month. This is episode number 26 for June 2010. Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from all over the world to talk about the news from the past month or so. Today we have a wonderful episode with Turkey from Saudi Arabia and Kelly from the land of Canada and Randy from Hawaii. You thought it was going to end with an A, didn't you? Huh. How are you doing, everyone?
I'm doing good here.
Wonderful.
Aloha. How's that?
So Randy is not actually from Hawaii, but you are in Hawaii, which is, you know, close enough. We'll get what we can, we'll take what we can get. You've been a month?
Right. And it gives us credibility for being worldwide again, because we are exactly all the way around the world from one another.
Absolutely. We are.
Oh, so I you suppose. Are.
Yeah, you're 12 hours away from me on the, you know, on the clock, Randy. That's impressive.
Yes, and so that, yeah, it's impressive that we're both awake, I think, is what's impressive.
And Kelly is, of course, in Canada right now, just close to the... Where is the G20 happening?
Toronto.
Oh, so not so... Well,
not so close.
No, it's not. Where are you?
No, I'm in Alberta.
Really? I have no idea where that is. So
Calgary.
I'm going to sound surprised.
I live close to Calgary.
Oh, okay. Where, you know, you have Olympics and stuff. I get it. And Turkey. It wasn't that funny, Kelly. Thank you for laughing. Turkey, you're doing well. You're iPhone-less, apparently. Very bitter about the lack of iPhone 4.
Hey, you're the one who are complaining about your iPhone, so I was just offering you a way to get rid of it. Just send it to me. That's all.
Again, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's not this completely revolutionary thing that people are, you know, falling head over heels over. It's good.
Hey,
it's nice.
Did Steve say it was revolutionary?
I don't think he did. But he did say it's a lot more than what you thought it was going to be. And
so
no,
it's a lot
actually...
more. End of topic. Steve said it. End of this.
All right. Fair enough.
My carrier site says it changes everything again.
Yeah, there you go.
The tagline.
It doesn't change everything again.
I don't know.
No, it changes some things.
I don't think we even have it in Canada yet either. Turkey.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, thank you.
You no, don't
you,
get anything.
You're getting it next month.
Oh.
See,
well, we're not getting it until September, I think.
Just send me something like, you know, 700 euros. I'll FedEx one to you.
You know, Patrick, you should have picked up two and sent them here. I could have sold them for you double the price.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, we can still do that. Let's talk after the show. We're going to start an illegal iPhone smuggling operation. So I hope you guys have lots of interesting stuff to talk about, because basically what dominated the world news for me in the past month was World Cup and horrible performance by the French team. So I will give you guys a choice. We can either start with other topics and finish beautifully with the World Cup and all its woes, or we can start with the lighthearted, interesting, funny World Cup stuff and then finish with horrible news about people getting killed or something. What do you guys
think? Oh, wow. What a great decision.
Yes, yes. So either we start with the World Cup or we start with the World Cup. Interesting.
Really know myself.
I think I want to start with the World Cup just to make fun of you, Patrick, and your lousy team.
I don't understand what you say. All right, so let's humor Mr. Turkey, and we'll start with the World Cup if you guys want. Do you want me to give you the report on how it's been going in France, and then you can tell me how you saw it, or do you want to start and then have the surprise of how we took our amazing performance?
You went on strike?
How did you guess?
I'm going to guess that someone burned a car.
Well, if you multiply that by a few hundreds, you might get it right. Okay, for people who have been living under a rock, the French team was participating in the World Cup, of course, and they were, I don't think they were the favorites by far, but they were definitely in the leading, the leading teams, maybe the top five, maybe a little bit less. And for the first few matches, which led to their exclusion of the World Cup, they made possibly the worst performance of their whole career and history in the past 50 years. And not only did they not play well, the reason why they didn't perform well was that apparently, I'm saying apparently because I only heard about all this, I'm not a big football fan, but it made so much noise in the press and in the country in general that everyone was talking about this. So apparently the reason why they didn't manage to even, play remotely well at any point was that they were playing in a very individual manner, like very selfish, trying to hug the ball and to go on their own as far as possible, not playing as a team. So if they had played, if they had lost but played in a respectful way, I think it might not have been that bad. But the fact that they were so horribly selfish in the games really played against them and helped build that antagonistic feeling against the team, because now it's really, they are hated like no one else has been hated in the country in a very long time. So not only were they playing really badly and losing to teams that were ranking far below them, but after that, apparently after the first match, there was a fight at halftime between one of the players and maybe the captain of the team and the coach. But with the captain of the team and the coach. So subsequent to that fight, which was reported on the news by we don't really know who, he was expelled. And on the day after that, they were supposed to have a public training session, which a lot of people had gone to look at, watch the team train, the team that they love. And they got out of the bus, went on the field, and apparently one of them got in a fight with the physical trainer guy. And after that fight, they all went back into the bus and went on strike. I kid you not, they actually went on strike. Like, it's if you want to try and be even more stereotypical, I don't think it's possible. They went on strike, which after their horrible performance threw the whole country into a frenzy against the team. And they didn't play. They actually wrote a note, a stupid statement that they had their coach read to the press. And that was an explosion of hate in the country. The press was having titles like, don't, shed a tear or a moment of thought for that team. They are shameful. They do not deserve it, blah, 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 all of that. And the day after that, they went for what will be their last match in that World Cup and performed even less well than they had before, getting beaten by the South African team, which is ranking ridiculously lower than themselves. So basically, this is a long explanation to let you know that they are honestly completely hated by everyone in the country. They are, we have, as a you know, society, no respect, no love, no pity for them. And the fact that they make so much money and are supposed to represent the country in that sports encounter makes it even worse, and really condemns them to, I think, a lifetime of scorn at this point. And that's where we are. Now that I'm guessing that's the point where you say that you guys couldn't stop yourselves from laughing of seeing all of this happening, right? Randy, let's start with Randy.
With the French story, it was impossible to laugh, when at the same time Italy was melting down, and that was a lot funnier. And there was at the time... At the time, there was a lot of concern that England was going to be ousted in the first round. And, of course, also among the top half-ranked teams, Denmark was ousted in the first round. And so there were some funnier things. Like, what was going on, at least in what we could read and see, what we saw on TV about the French, was just sad. It was just depressing. It just,
Turkey will manage to laugh about it, but we'll see.
Right, because he will personalize you into the story and then laugh. He's already laughing. I can hear him laughing from whatever this is. 14,000 miles away, I can hear him laugh.
Okay, so for you, it was just sad? You were sad?
Right, the French dust-up was sad. It was much funnier how the Italians broke down, because... the French team went home. I imagine the Italian team just had to go somewhere else in the world but Italy. You know, they weren't vilified the way the French team were. They were just, they just could never ever step foot in public again and be considered, a citizen of Italy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, from here, it sure felt like the French team was even... Because I don't know if the Italian team was... You know, they didn't play well, but didn't they at least play together? One of the biggest things we heard about the French team was they didn't even play together. There were comments going around saying things like, if you want to play individually, go play tennis or something. Or one of the funnier ones was, the French team plays with blue collars. So we call them the Blues. And people were saying, well, if you want to watch Blues win, then you should go watch Avatar and stuff like that, which was funny.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really harsh.
I think the reason is that the French were more of a soap opera team than the Italians. The Italians just didn't play good, but the French did a lot to make the whole game exciting, even with their poor playing. With the strike and the player being kicked off and sent back home and the coach and everything. Just...
So you heard about the strike?
Yes, of course I heard about the strike. Although, to be honest, I haven't seen a single game in the World Cup because I really don't care about soccer or football or whatever.
No, me neither. It's just the drama around it.
But the drama around it and the news, and Saudi culture is a huge football culture, and they've been following the World Cup like crazy. So it's in all the news, whether TV, online, newspapers. So you can't miss it. So apparently, but the French were topping everything.
So how did you guys hear about the strike? Was it like, oh, they're going on strike, that's weird? Or they're going on strike, here the French people go again, it's not surprising?
I don't think the writers kept in mind that the French usually strike. They just said, what are these idiots doing a strike during a game? Who strikes at playing a football game? For God's sake, it's not like they're poor. Yeah, they're getting minimum wage, so they're complaining they want more.
There was actually a lot of people were making sure that in the government wanted to make sure that they wouldn't get the money that they were supposed to get for playing, for representing the country.
Didn't they come in a gigantic, I think, 747 jet or something, first class, and so on?
Of course.
And they left, yeah. And they left on a private jet, completely rented, not private jet. What do you call these jets for tourism?
Charter.
A charter jet that's completely traveler class. Yeah.
I don't know about that, but they did say...
Economic class. No, that was in the news. Okay. Saudis were happy about writing that. They left on a charter flight, completely humiliated.
They did say that they were going to make sure themselves that they weren't, you know, they were not going to get the benefits from, you know, the monetary benefits from all of this. Their sponsors left them immediately after that strike announcement, and we're even going to have some sort of congressional or parliamentary commission to look into what happened and make sure that things, you know, get there are consequences about this. Kelly.
I got nothing. I listened to the radio and I hear snippets about the World Cup, but I all
you mean
I
the
know
World
is
Cup
everybody...
is not a big thing for you guys?
Well, it is, but not for me. Like, aww. All I hear about is, oh, I hate the Vuvuzela, and I missed this whole France thing. It's kind of an awesome story, but I must have not been listening to the radio that day.
Well, so, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing.
But a quick
World Cup update. Uruguay just won on South Korea and are qualifying for the quarterfinal.
Right. As we're recording this, the first round has just ended yesterday, and the second round is starting. Or, you know, just the first game of the second round has just been played, and we're about 2 hours before kickoff in USA versus Ghana. And it's very odd how in Canada, where Kelly is, they are a part of the, you know, the British Commonwealth, and one of the few countries around the world that's a part of the British Commonwealth that is just really uninterested in football. It just doesn't play there.
That's strange. The other thing I wanted to talk about, which was how much bigger it's getting in, I was going to say in North America, but apparently it's only the U.S. because you guys are winning stuff. Because for people who don't know, Randy is originally from the U.S. He's now living in Canada, but for a few weeks in Hawaii now. But so it's apparently it's not that big in Canada, just in the US.
It just isn't.
It is.
But Canada is so big and not populous. And so Canada's, you know, this really spread out country where you don't have population centers that have anything to do with other population centers. And so it's a country that has room for like one organized sport, and boy do they pay attention to that one organized sport, but it's not soccer.
So to make them pay attention to soccer, we should give them like sticks to hit each other with or something?
More cars and flammable fluids.
So Randy, in the US they have been paying attention to it now. Is it only because all of a sudden the US team is performing, you know, well? I was going to say moderately well, but considering what my team has been doing, I don't think I can say that.
The US has been performing well if you look at it on a long scale. And so, you know, there are more people that are paying attention to the World Cup in the United States than 4 years ago. And there were more people 4 years ago than 4 years before that, and so forth. It's just a long growth for interest in the sport in the United States. And it, of course, yes, a part of that rides on the back of the national team, you know, getting better and having better results from every 4 years to the next 4 years. But there's a heck of a lot more to it than just that. For one thing, if you're just comparing the United States and Canada, all over the southern part of the United States, you have the kind of weather where soccer can be played, you know, 9 or 10 months out of the year, whereas in Canada, getting the growth from the kids on upward is much more difficult because there aren't a lot of areas where you can play soccer, you know, comfortably for more than 3 or 4 months out of the year.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kelly, anything more inspiring at this point, or do you just not care?
About the World Cup?
Yeah, soccer in general, and I don't know.
Like, there's certain probably pockets of World Cup fanaticism, like in Calgary and probably Vancouver and in Toronto, because there's a lot of people from other countries where football is huge.
Yeah, it's fanaticism. It's a fanaticism for every other country in the world.
It's cultural. You know, it's totally cultural.
Yeah. Okay, so the U.S. is getting to our, I shouldn't say to our hobbies, but the Canada, not really. But so do you think that the U.S. is still going to be paying attention after the World Cup ends, or is it going to go back in the closet and you're going to go back to, you know, baseball and that weird football that you play?
Well, that's definitely the truth. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's not like after the World Cup's over, if the United States has a friendly match with Barbados, that there are going to be 80,000 people there, and it's going to be on, you know, it's going to be televised, and millions will watch. That won't happen, and I don't think you'll really ever see that level of interest in the United States. But the main thing I think we're learning is that the game is in a bit of a decline among the European teams, right? There were 13 European teams that started the cup, and 7 of them were taken out in the first round. It's just remarkable.
All the big ones, except for the UK, have been taken out, right?
And Germany is still in the cup. Germany is, yeah.
Or Netherlands, whatever you want to call it.
Right, the Dutch are in. That's a big surprise. All the European teams that didn't make it. And I think that the story every 4 years that interests the world at most is the participation of the teams from Africa. You know, this year there were 6 countries from Africa. Only Ghana made it to the second round, and you know they're facing the U.S. today. And it's the U.S. is a lot like Africa in that regard. Can put on a lot of bluster. But will they actually dance on the dance floor? And the answer is usually no. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, I guess that at this point we're not really going to be paying attention anymore in France. But still, I think we are. Maybe it's just me, but I think we're still a little bit interested in how the U.S. is going to do. That's something that I think I'll follow with the corner of my eye, but probably not much more.
Well, if France is anything like us, they're definitely going to follow it until the end.
Until the end? Oh, well, yes. Yeah, probably the other people. You know, there was a lot of interesting commercial marketing promotions happening before the World Cup started. And all of these were like, if you buy your TV here now, we will reimburse it to you if the French team wins the World Cup. So I think a lot of people are.
I think those people are celebrating.
Yeah, exactly. The managers from these shops are pretty happy. They must be the only ones in the country, though. all right, let's move on to something else. The other international story that we had was, as Kelly was saying earlier, the G20, G8/G20 happening in Canada right now. From what I understand, there are 2 main issues being discussed there. The first one would be Iran and North Korea. What are we going to do to you know, make sure they don't do anything bad? And the other one would be, it's a little bit more surprising. It would be, not surprising, but how do we make sure that the banks are reined in and don't do anything stupid again, and at the same time make sure that growth is not threatened? And the slightly annoying thing is that apparently, everyone was agreeing a year ago, and now everyone's saying, well, half of the people, the European or the countries in the West still want to do something about it. And the countries like, you know, China and more emerging countries are saying, we don't have a problem and our growth should not be threatened, so stop being a pain. And it does worry me a little bit. But I guess, you know, Kelly, you're in the middle of all this, right? Mm. What do you think?
This is such a political issue. I'm afraid to comment too much. Are we, like, you're asking me about the banks?
No, just, you know, what is happening in Canada in regards to the G8, you know. No, nothing. And also, please don't be afraid to say something stupid, because that's the norm in this show. So,
The big thing in Canada right now is the spending that's going on for the G20, because they're holding it in Toronto. So this is a major city center. They're holding it in downtown Toronto. So the security measures are reaching, I can't remember the number. It's a very big number for the money they're dishing out for security measures. And there's a perimeter downtown Toronto.
Kelly, yeah. I just saw it right now on CNN. It's $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we've been hearing, is that, that the total budget for just security is $1 billion.
A big, holy moly.
You would not believe what's going on. Like, the downtown Toronto is a ghost town. There's nobody down there. There's police on every corner. They're expecting protests. There was a rather large one on Friday where just a couple of arrests were made. And there's a tent city going up in a park in Toronto. They're going to camp out all weekend to draw the world leaders' minds toward the fact that people are living like that. And the big issue is all of the spending that's going towards this very lavish event that nobody really sees any results from. Randy probably knows a little bit more about it, but I know that the whole thing is very showy. Like, they built an indoor lake to show off the cottage country of Ontario and demonstrate the importance of the environment. And I'm like, you're in cottage country. Like, just go to a lake. Like, I don't know if it's to protect them, but
that is the funniest thing too, because they spent $23 million on this media center with a $2 million lake in the middle of it. And then they called it the Experience Canada Pavilion. I love that.
It's
in Canada. Like,
it's quite, I have to say, well, first of all, for me personally, $1 billion on security, I don't care what it is. Nothing like that is worth $1 billion. I mean, I understand it's all the world's leaders and they have to be protected. And of course, rationally, I understand this. But $1 billion, the other thing that I related to immediately is what you were saying, Kelly. It doesn't seem like all of this is ever doing anything. I'm sure it's only a perception issue, but definitely it does feel like all of this is always talk, 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 talk. It doesn't lead to anything. Like, the main issue is the creation of a tax, a bank tax, that we are very much in favor for, but other countries like Brazil or India or China don't want to see happen for the reasons I was saying before. But the point being, it's never yielding actual results. And if you're spending $1 billion just for protection, just do it via Skype. You know, everyone in their office, connect on Skype, you chat, you can do it every day if you want. It's not going to cost a lot of money.
Let's be honest, it's true. $1 billion is a lot, and it's a lot of expense. But if you really look into it, deep into it, with the amount of money that ends up transferring between these countries just from agreements and meetings, it's going to exceed that hundreds of times at least. So there is a benefit, but what we're looking at, what we don't look at these benefits, because that's not what they usually put in the news, which is basically what they're putting in the news, is all of these great announcements of agreement between the 20 states. But if you look between one state and another, between each two states and so on, there's a lot of money going around.
So you're talking about commercial agreements?
Yes. Mm. Yes. So there is a benefit from these meetings. And usually these leaders, they always usually have with them a lot of a number of their ministers, a number of their business leaders in their group. And they usually do end up having meetings. And a lot of deals are done during the right. G20.
Yeah, I guess that's something we don't really, but we don't really see it because no one reports on it. The main, well, I might be overstating it a little bit, but the main aspect of the G8 and the G20 are always very political, and that's the main thing we focus on. And I would go even farther. That might be because of the socialist nature of our beautiful country, but if we were to talk about the commercial agreements, it would be regarded with a little bit of disdain. I don't think it would be exactly disdain, but how can I say it? It would be looked down on. Again, if we talk about money, it would be, oh, look at the great people, the greats of this world making money, exchanging money and doing commercial stuff when the poorer people in this world are dying of hunger. So we wouldn't see it with a completely positive spin. Anyway, I'm a little bit all over the place here. Yeah, Kelly?
The Prime Minister of Canada's main... goal here is trying to convince other countries to put money into maternal and child health care in developing countries, like saving children's and mothers' lives because so many women are dying in childbirth. And they're trying to convince other countries to put money into developing those programs to promote the health of maternal health.
Mm. It's always a difficult... a difficult thing here, because of course we know that we could be doing more, but it's always like, how much do you need to do? How much are you expected to do? And at one point, if it's not efficient, or if you're already sending that much money, how much more do you need to send for it to start working? Or, you know, I guess it's easy to go for us to go to the, oh, yes, we could be sending so much more because we're spending, I don't know, $1 billion on security, for example, or whatever, you know, some money on the French team or football team. Or, but I don't know. It's we would easily go to horrible capitalistic spirit, we should be doing more for the third world. I don't know if it's that easy of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's definitely not that easy of a situation. As evidenced by how impossible it is for what these nations do when they get together to then actually enact what they say they want to after the fact.
I would go even farther. The thing is, we are sending a lot. We, as you know, the West is sending a lot of money in developing countries and third world countries, and there is always more we could be doing. I guess, you know, if. A lot of the feelings that I see in France, again, I'm trying to analyze it from my perspective, is when you have money, there are these people who look at you thinking, well, you have this and that, and some people have nothing. You should be a little bit ashamed. But then you look at them and you're thinking, well, you have, you know, a car, or you have you just bought a PlayStation or a TV. How much do you have to give up for it to mean that you actually have given up enough? I don't know if that even makes sense, but Randy, about oh God, I'm really tired today. Sorry. How is the G8, G20 being perceived from there?
Not much. I realize it seems like every time I'm on the Phileas Club, you ask me about the biggest piece of international news, and I say, but the U.S. aren't really paying attention to it. And that's the case. There's the usual reporting in the U.S., telling you that that it's going to be happening on this date and that date, and that, Canada is spending $500 million flying F-18s over Toronto. And by the way, that's the major part of the security cost is jet fuel. And, that sort of thing.
You heard that turkey snickered just when he said that.
Yes, I did. Yes. He lives in a magical land where fuel is free. Anyway.
Hey, it's not free. It's cheap.
So there's the usual reporting you would expect, but it's not even close to being headline news in this time when the headline news in the United States at every minute of every day has been an ongoing fury about the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
There's just the G20. There was actually a round of media a couple of days ago that asked the question, are G20 talking about the oil spill? No? Okay, then that's not big news. That was
Maybe we can talk about the oil spill a little bit more because I want to hear about that. But before that, do you see from Hawaii a difference in the – because, okay, the image I would have of Hawaii is from – in mainland U.S., you would have the regular mainland U.S. thing. But in Hawaii, it's that resort islands that everyone talks about, where everyone ever talks about is, beach and sun and tourists and the whole economy being centered about tourism, which doesn't really leave any room for anything else, including things like the G20 or maybe even the oil spill.
People in Hawaii are busy fighting the Japanese occupation right now. So that's what they're
Hawaii is behind the times, I'll give you that. I don't know if we're 60 years behind the times, but
one of the largest tourist attraction for Japanese people is Hawaii. Isn't that right?
That is correct. In fact, that makes up in dollars per person, that makes up the largest share of Hawaii's revenue is from the Japanese.
When I was living in Japan, it seemed like every other person was spending summer in Hawaii.
Right. Anyway. So you're correct. You're correct that there it's very an insular part of the world, but it has to be because it's so remote. It's so distant from everything else. But to say it's not entirely politically minded is incorrect. In fact, I would say I would put Hawaii up there in states with New York and California in terms of the interest in politics. It's just that because of the distance, Hawaii's interest in politics is a bit more local than most places in the mainland U.S. And the distance, a news story like the oil spill, its depth is based on how close you are to the oil spill. So in the United States, Hawaii is as far away from the oil spill as you could get. But it's still, if you pick up a newspaper in Hawaii, and one of the big things that happened in the last month is the two longtime major newspapers in Hawaii merged, which is very odd. It's odd to see two newspapers that have stood opposed to one another in a lot of ways for many, many decades, like 100 years each, to just come together, and now they're the same thing. But if you pick up the newspaper, you will see a story on the front page maybe 4 days a week here about the oil spill. Like I say, a lot of local politics, really strange local politics in Hawaii, and I'll hit on that again later because one of the details is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in politics, and that's saying a lot.
All right. Sounds like something worth listening to. Anyone else has anything about the G20? It only just started. It's not like there's so much to say, I suppose, at this point.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
They're just focusing a lot on, North Korea and Iran, and Stephen Harper's main focus is maternal health, and the rest of the country is just rolling their eyes at the money that's being spent on world leaders that have not apparently led anybody anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, that, yeah, I guess that's a little bit harsh. It's the easy way of seeing it, but
yeah, that's the common consensus, and yeah. I mean, it's not entirely true, but
yeah,
we don't see results.
All right. Well, let's move on to something else then. Well, Randy, you wanted to talk to us about that weird political thing? Let's start with that.
We can come back to that at the end of the show. It's just not, I can't even go there yet.
Okay, fine.
tell me, I would like to know from your perspective, what the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico has looked like.
Well, you know, it's far away enough from us that it doesn't actually concern us directly and we're not threatened by it. But it certainly has an effect in, like, you know, any oil spill would have. And we're not super oil company friendly to begin with. As you know, we have, of course, we use a lot of oil, but we also have a lot of nuclear energy. So I would guess the way we see it is not, oh my God, oil is horrible. Look at that. Look at what happened. It would be more along the lines of, you know, kind of subconsciously something like, see, we told you. Now let's get serious and get some nuclear energy going. A little bit, you know, because it's not like we're seriously considering alternative energies, you know, solar, wind, all of that is not completely ready yet. And we know that, but the immediate alternative we go to is nuclear. And I think that maybe a few people have started changing their mind about nuclear in the U.S. after that, because it's the only one that's a serious alternative to oil at this point. I don't know. That's the way I see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all I've got.
All right.
Turkey, what do you have for us? Something wonderful, amazing, and not at all violent.
Oh, you're picking it hard.
No, just go with what you have. I know, you know, nonviolence is not easy for your news. They usually involve, you know, whiplashes, cutting of hands, stuff like that.
Let's see. There's a huge war right now going on between some religious leaders in Saudi.
Oh, that ought to be fun. Go ahead.
Well, there's a huge argument about some religious laws and so on between different religious leaders. And some of them have been coming out, specifically, I can say about four, to be specific, of them have come out and have been giving their opinions and giving fatwas in very controversial matters, which disagrees with the majority opinion. Hmm. Which has been pissing a lot of religious leaders who have been attacking them as well. So there's a huge religious fight going on right now in the media.
So just so we understand, any religious leader can go ahead and issue a fatwa on his own accord. He doesn't need, yes. You know. Okay. So can you give us a couple of examples of these laws that have been...
Some of them are just plain stupid. Some of them, for example, one religious leader, we have something in Islam that's about relationships. If a person, if a baby is breastfed from a woman who isn't his mother for a specific number of times, I think it's about 5 times, then he becomes her son.
Wow.
Yeah, through breastfeeding. So,
are you sure it's only 5 times? Because I'm telling you, when when you have a baby and you're breastfeeding it, like five times could happen in a space of like 6 hours.
Yeah, it's five times, and which makes him his mother. He cannot marry her or marry her daughters or anything. He becomes like their brother and so on. So
they marry her. That's just disturbing to think of. That he would grow up to marry the woman that breastfed him?
He can't. He can't.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, that's probably a good law.
Because he breastfed him, that cancels it.
Okay,
she becomes his mother. Her daughters become his sisters.
Good.
So he can't even marry her daughters.
Okay.
And so you have this system here. This is a religious system. So one of the religious leaders got a question, because we have adoption is not legal in Islamic law.
Really?
Well, in a way, you can adopt a child, but when he's an adult, he's not a member of the family. He cannot. He could still marry from his parent, his sister, an adoption.
Okay.
He doesn't take the name of the family. He keeps his family name. He's not allowed to change his family name and so on. So one person asked him a question. Apparently, they had a child who became an adult, and by religious law, he's supposed to get out of the house. He's not allowed to mix with the women of the house anymore because he's not related to them. So they asked him about a way to make it legal religiously, because they're religious people. And he said, well, she could still breastfeed him even if he's an adult.
Oh,
yeah, so, well, she doesn't breast him directly from her breast. It's breast milk. She gives him five cups of breast milk and so on, and he becomes
so
part
he
of
was.
The family.
Was that actually considered seriously, or did everyone hear that answer and go like, "What is he talking about?" Please tell me it was the latter.
Can you repeat that? I just wasn't sure.
You weren't listening to me.
Yeah, I wasn't. Sorry.
When he came up with that answer, did people listen to it and think, yes, it makes sense? Or did everyone go, what the hell are you talking about? What was the reaction?
What the hell are you talking about?
Okay. Okay.
He was highly condemned.
I see.
So, and however he used religious text to prove that it's okay. And to be honest, if you look, you have to look at it from different aspects. And when you're looking at it, in my opinion, I still think it's a crazy thing to say, but it sounds logical to me. It makes life easier. Well, yeah, because in Islamic law, this kid, he grew up with the family, but when he became an adult, he cannot mix with them. He can't even go in the house. He cannot meet his mother, who he raised him since he was like 3 years old or 5 years old when they were adopted.
Wouldn't the easier solution be to make him an adoptive son, to sort of create a status of adoption?
That's against Islamic laws.
But can't you make a fatwa that says, No,
that's strict and that's clear. That's in the Quran. No adoption is allowed.
Oh,
so there are laws that you cannot bring a fatwa for it, because they're clear and they're final.
Okay, so it's trying to find a loophole to allow things. Okay.
Yes, so that's one fatwa that has been controversial. Another fatwa, I mentioned it a long time ago, where one religious leader said there's nothing wrong about women and men mixing in public. So that's one another fatwa that has been very controversial. There's another religious leader who said that in Islamic law there is no clear text that says singing is forbidden. So, and those three, for example, have been very controversial. It's been a huge thing in newspapers. People have been fighting over it. It's a big fuss going on here.
So it's not just a one-sided, it's not like one leader is coming under attack because what he's saying is controversial. It's more of a general atmosphere of religion is the different fatwas in general are becoming a little bit controversial. Some in one, you know, one side of the more liberal aspects of it, one in the more... Is there a reason why all of a sudden people would start questioning all these fatwas? Or
no, the people have always questioned fatwas from the older days, depending on who says it and how many people agree with him. But in the older days, these fatwas would not come out because the media was more controlled. In recent years, with King Abdullah, the media has been more liberal and has been given more freedom, whether they're religious people or the media or liberals, to speak out their minds. So these are becoming, and plus we have all of these new media. You have the internet now, you have satellite TVs and so on, which helped to spread these fatwas now. And now they're becoming very controversial because for these three fatwas, for example, are going against the norm. And that is pissing people off, especially the extremist religious people, because they have a system that's it, end of story. You're not supposed to change anything. This is how it works. That's end of it. However, these fatwas, they are not completely brand new. They didn't bring something like out of the blue and said a fatwa. These fatwas are based on books that and fatwas that are 500, 600, 1,000 years old. But nobody ever talked about them before.
So does anyone at this point look at the media and maybe even King Abdullah and say, you know, the media should be more controlled, or King Abdullah is being too lax, or, you know, things like that? Do they ever turn their attention to that? Or
Definitely. There have been complaints, especially from the religious parties, that the media has been too relaxed. It's been they've been talking too much, and they shouldn't be talking about things, and so on. So there has been from the mostly from the religious. Of course, the liberals also say the media is not open enough yet. We need more freedom. So you have these two parties are fighting over it.
One last question, which I'm actually surprised I didn't ask before. I don't think I did ask about this on the show, but you mentioned the new media and the internet that help spread all of these informations. How much are all of these being used? I mean, I know you're on Twitter yourself. You use Foursquare. You communicate quite a bit, and I see a few messages in Arabic coming, you know, coming from you from time to time. So I suspect you're not only speaking with your American friends. You're also having an online life inside Saudi Arabia, and of course, you have blogs that you participate in. How much of a part of that, of the media, is this in general?
Well, the media now in Saudi Arabia, when it comes to the internet, is now huge. We have a huge following for the internet. Surprisingly, we have the infrastructure has been developing very fast recently. The prices have been improving. It's been a lot easier for people to get online. There's a huge demand for websites, forums, and Skype, for example. So the media is huge. Just about everybody now has a website, everything. We have gotten to the point where marketing is also online. You can find ads, and they have a link for a Facebook page, Twitter account, YouTube page, and so on. And it's becoming very the norm right now here. So
you've lived in the U.S. You obviously know a lot about, you know, the way things work in the West. Would you say it's about on par now with these kinds of levels?
In a way, yes. It's kind of there. We still have the censorship. So we still have censorship here. However, people who are serious about what they want to look for, they just go around the censorship. There's always ways, and it's not very difficult. I think censorship is not as strict and as powerful as like in China. It's more targeted to the majority and the normal people, and less about the experts or the professionals or the educated. And because those people usually do find a way around. And there has been a lot of things going on online. A lot of news, Arabic newspapers have been coming up online. A lot of online-only newspapers that were established. And whether you get from liberals, extremists, religious, moderates, so on, everybody now is online. Saudi Arabia now is fiber optics is becoming everywhere. They're installing fiber optics everywhere. People now are getting, for example, 100 megabytes per second speed on fiber optics. It costs about, maybe I think right now, it costs about $120 a month and so on. So an unlimited bandwidth. So
it would seem that the cat is out of the bag, kind of. The government is, or even the religious organizations, are never going to manage to control the information anymore once it's on the internet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they cannot control it anymore. There is censorship, as I said, but it's not. It's only practical for the average Joe, as you can say. But for other people, it's not. They can find a ways around it. And plus, even now, the internet has reached a point where the religious extremists, the moderates, and the liberals, they all want the internet, but they only want the pages they want, of course, each one of them. But they all want the internet because now they all have huge presence on the internet. It's the way for them to spread the word, spread their ideas, ideology, and so on.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Kelly and Randy, you've been super silent. Anything you want to add before we move on to something else?
I just enjoy my monthly update on Saudi Arabia. Admittedly, if you follow Turkey on Twitter, you can also find out where he's having coffee every morning. But there aren't many people in Saudi Arabia who are getting on the internet like Turkey does and just telling it like it is. It's nice.
Well, actually, Randy, you just need to find them. There's a lot.
Well, just, and we're speaking different. I should have said speaking English.
English. Just go to the people who follow me on Twitter. You'll find at least 20 Saudis who write in English, and most of them will be females.
Really? Ooh, that's interesting. Would you have one person to recommend to follow on Twitter, other than you, if you had to choose just one?
Just one. And well, kind of difficult. I'm trying to figure out who talks. If you want technology, there's a guy called Khalid.
No, personally,
he writes a lot about technology. He's from Saudi, but he writes, of course, about Saudi as well. But it's mostly about technology. There's a person.
I'd be interested in hearing from a female perspective.
Female. There's a couple of ladies I usually follow. There's one called Manal. I think her ID is MANO_. That's Manu_ Manal. And there's also, I believe her name is, I don't know how to pronounce this, it's
MANO_ is from Pakistan.
Wait, MANO.
Yes. She's from Pakistan. Which is interesting also, but
let me send you the at the way it is. Maybe it's a zero and I'm reading it now or something. Okay. Anyway, so I'll send it to you right now on the chat. There's two ladies. These are usually I follow them.
Oh, it's two N's. That's why.
Yeah.
MANO_. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Manal and Miss Ice, I think that's what's 81. That's one word.
So MISSICE 81.
Yes.
Cool. Well, I will go follow MANO_ and hear more about Saudi Arabia. There you go. All right. Let's move on to something else. Who has something super interesting /funny/cool?
I have something sort of interesting that I wanted to chat about when we were talking about the BP oil spill.
Go ahead.
If that's all right.
Sure.
So as I mentioned, I live in Alberta. Do you know what the oil sands are?
Have you heard of them? What?
The oil sands.
I am not sure I do. By all which right. I mean I don't.
So bad, Patrick. How could you not know that?
Well, I actually do, but I want her to explain it in case someone else doesn't know.
All right, if you say so.
Good save, isn't it?
Okay, so I'm going to do my best here. The oil sands are a project where they, I don't know the technical aspect, but they extract the oil from this place up north in Alberta. It's very, very far north. No, but there's hardly any roads to get up there. And it's a huge environmental debate in Alberta and Canada and the world. It was a huge target at the, big summit they had in Sweden. Was it Sweden? The environmental conference they had?
Possibly.
Anyways, a lot of finger pointing at the Alberta oil stands. Anyways, so between the BP oil spill and the Alberta oil sands, there's been a lot of talk about what's worse, oil drilling or oil sands, and everybody points the finger at the other. Oh, the oil sands are worse, mm. or deep sea drilling is worse, and the most recent story with the Alberta oil sands is 2 years ago there was there's something called a tailing pond where I'm trying it's kind of like a Randy, do you know what a tailing pond is?
A slag pit. It's where all the crap goes.
Thank you. So this company called Syncrude, they work in the oil sands, and they're like around these tailing ponds. They're supposed to put things like air cannons and things to scare away birds to keep them from landing in this slag pit. And in 2008, 1,600 ducks landed in it, and they all died because they
1,600
1,600 ducks. And just this week, they were found, like, Syncrude was found guilty in the deaths of these ducks.
And, wait a second. There was a trial because the ducks died? I mean, well, I'm sure it's not horrible that ducks die, but...
Well, it was because they failed to protect the wildlife. Like, it's...
Okay.
Yeah, under the Environmental Protection Act and the Migratory Bird something act. So they failed to take proper precautions while they're going about their business up there. So that's a big news story in Alberta because everybody works in oil and it's all oil and all eyes are on the Alberta oil sands. So that was something I just wanted to comment on.
You know, I was wondering about this last month about the oil spill in Florida. And I guess the question applies here too. When you're a large part of your economy depends on this industry, how can do you still think, oh, it's a horrible, mistake, but we still should keep working in this because it's our livelihood? Or what's the sentiment there? I guess I'm asking both for the Florida incident and the Alberta incident. Does the population react maybe more mildly to it because they work in this?
Or it is a little bit milder, but there's a lot of radical voices, like very loud voices against the oil sands and against any kind of big project like that has a huge environmental repercussion.
Well, I guess, the voices against are to be expected. I guess what I'm wondering is, do you have voices for that are going to say, yeah, it was a mistake, we'll make sure it doesn't happen again, and we have to keep doing it, apart from, the oil companies, which are, of course,
going to be... Well, the thing about the oil sands is you just don't know how bad it is. Like, there's so much information out there, and everybody says something else about, who's worse and what's worse and what's the worst way to get oil and the best way to get oil. There's people that say the oil sands is the worst thing to ever hit the face of the earth. Yeah. And then they're the people that, like scientists, I guess, I don't know if they're bought or whatever, but they're saying, well, no, it's not actually that bad. There's a lot of worse things we could be doing to get oil and are being done. So it's hard because you just don't know what to believe without being a scientist that's up there studying what's going on.
Yeah. What about the BP thing, Brandy, in the U.S.? Is it coming to some kind of a conclusion at any time soon? I guess it won't
never
until...
come to a conclusion.
Okay, just, that sounded ominous.
Oh, CNN put up an oil counter today. Mm. So now you can go to CNN.com and see the scrolling and ever increasing number of barrels of oil that have been deposited into the waters of the Gulf of Mexico, and it's just every day it's another level of hyperbole and people just freaking out. And you were just reminding me of one of my favorite moments in the oil spill, which was on a political commentary show in May. A fellow by the name of George Will was trying to downplay the size of the spill and the impact of the spill, which is really odd that's what the right wing has decided to do in the United States.
Doing it now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, in some parts of the left wing of the United States, they have stopped referring to the Republicans as the GOP, the Grand Old Party, and started calling them the GOBP, which I just think is damn funny. But anyway, so George Will is on this political commentary show, and he says, I'm quoting him because I've heard this quote so many times I could give it to you word for word. He said, by the way, wind farms kill a lot more birds daily than are probably going to be killed in this oil spill. And
jeez.
It's mind-bogglingly incorrect, and of course immediately all sorts of numbers came out about how many birds are killed by wind farms, because it's a significant number and it's in the hundreds of thousands per year. And depending on who you, and I'm talking about just in the United States, depending on whose numbers you go with, but let's just say it's going to be six figures a year now. And so as there are more wind farms built, there are more birds being killed by them. But the notion that the number daily is hugely significant is totally destroyed when you find out how many birds are killed by flying into buildings or being struck by cars, where the numbers are in the millions and tens of millions. And it's really the human impact on bird populations is really, really variable. And the fact is that, in the Gulf of Mexico, there are a couple of species that are being decimated by this thing, and there are some species that may not survive as a species as a result of this one oil spill. The impact on all sorts of wildlife is just tremendous. But the misstatements, the misinformation that's being put out, it's out of this world. I can't give you an example of misinformation that makes sense. There's actually a contingent of people who believe that the entire oil spill could be cleaned up with hay, dry grass.
Jeez.
I'm not kidding. I got this went around. I got an email from my mom with a video of these two good old boys from somewhere in the southern United States explaining how they were going to clean up the entire oil spill with hay. I'm not kidding. It's scary what this event has brought out of the woodwork.
I guess to start getting some kind of resolution, first of all, the spill would have to be closed. So we're not there yet. Sorry, Kelly, you wanted to comment?
Nothing. I was just going to say I was guilty of retweeting that, or actually starting a tweet about that.
About the guys with the hay?
About the hay, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, when you're talking about, let's say someone was to spill a gallon of oil in your swimming pool, it's just very, very different than when you were to spill hundreds of millions of gallons of oil into,
Well, it's the ocean.
So
it's much bigger.
Why doesn't BP just use hay if it's that easy?
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievable, though.
Is there an estimation of how much oil is actually out there? Because it seems like it's been going on for so long. It should be close to being all, spent and spilled.
No,
well,
that's
the
oh,
only
that's
number
a
in my mind is the money they spent to clean up till now, which is over $2 billion.
They freaking
yes,
should.
There are estimates of the size of the oil reserve under the ocean floor, and it's very large. And if this hole in it was left open, it would continue to spew for years, or many years, actually. You know,
jeez.
So yeah, they definitely have to do something about that. The total reserve down there is is in the hundreds of times greater than the amount that's come out so far.
All right. You know what? You were touting something kind of funny a little bit earlier, or at least weird in an entertaining way. Could you please take our mind off of dying birds and oil spills and tell us about that?
And suicidal French soccer players. Sure. Yes. So I am fortunate enough to have this opportunity to move to Hawaii and find work here and get to live here. And I think it's fantastic. My very first day that I got to Hawaii, my friend Chad took me on a drive around the island of Oahu. And it's political season in Hawaii. The state House of Representatives, the state Senate, the mayoral races for, mayor of Honolulu are all going on right now. And they are very high pitch. And so one of the strange things to see in Hawaii are all of the little signs that people put in the grass that tell you who they want you to vote for. And you get to see all the names. And names in Hawaii are unusual. You know, names in Hawaii are in a lot of times in Hawaiian. You're better off if you have a sort of local name. One of the candidates for Hawaii House of Representatives is doesn't have a local name. He was born in Utah, and he's actually of Tongan descent, and he went to BYU.
Wait, what's that? Is that like Indian or something?
Tonga. It's an island in the South Pacific. Tonga.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No problem. And so seeing his name on these signs among other names is just absolutely hard to take in. It's hard to believe that someone whose name is Richard Fail would be running seriously for as the Republican nominee for the state House of Representatives.
Oh, well, there you go. He's Republican, so it doesn't really... Yeah.
And his name really is Richard Fail. And his middle name, if you don't like calling him Dick Fail, his middle name is Lee, which I like to give a sort of French twist to and call him Dick LaFail. I just think this guy has got the worst name I've ever heard in politics, but just the worst. You couldn't have a worse brand than his name.
It's Fail, FALE. It's not FAIL. So,
oh sure, and if you wanted to say Fale, that would be fine. Although it's very close to folly all of a sudden. Which actually, I think the word fail comes from the word folly or vice versa. But either any way you spin it, the guy he's a white guy. And so you can't look at him and say he's Hawaiian, so we're going to say fale. He's Dick Fail. And his signs tell you that he's Dick Fail. And I just can't believe that they're serious. I can't believe it. You keep thinking that they're going to wink at you, and say, okay, we're just kidding. We just picked the guy for his name, and it's a joke. But it's
you
not
know
a
what?
Joke.
You know, I will go the other route and think that with a name like that, he must have been bullied in school and made fun of in college and all of that, which are actually what freaks and geeks suffer. And that actually builds their characters and makes them better people in the end when they become adults because of all this. So I'm going to tell you that because of his name, he's probably better equipped to defend his constituency, and he probably has a stronger character because of it.
Okay, whatever. That's great. Great argument.
All right. Okay. I guess
it's a boy named Sue. Gotcha.
What? A boy named Sue? What's that?
That's a song by
Johnny Cash.
Oh, I don't listen to Johnny Cash.
It's about a boy named Sue who grows up without a father, and all he ever does is fight, and he becomes tough and strong.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a boy named Fail. all right. Anyone else has anything else, or are we done?
I have nothing happy.
It doesn't
happen. There's been massive flooding in my city.
Really?
Yeah. I was whining last weekend because I had a puddle of water in my bedroom, which is in the basement.
Oh.
And next day I realized people are like losing their farms and parts of the Trans-Canada Highway are washed out, and it's been pretty bad actually. Lots of homes in my city are uninhabitable.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. Is there some kind of governmental oversight that led to that flooding because they didn't spend the right money where they should have or something, or?
No, it's just that area. I mean, there may have been, I don't think there's any, what are those things called where they can release some of the water? I'm not really sure.
Levees or?
Yeah, levees. But there, I don't think there's anything like that in the South Saskatchewan River. But
so it's just been raining a lot.
It rained a lot. And it doesn't, like, it's a very arid climate. It's a city called Medicine Hat. And it's just, you know, there's nothing. It's very dry. It's a desert. But the river rose, and all those homes down in the lower part of town are all wiped out. There's farms.
So your house actually got flooded?
Yeah. It was just a puddle, and I was really whiny about it until I realized what was going on. I kept vacuuming it up with a shop vac, and it kept coming back. And I'm like,
wait,
no.
You vacuumed your puddle?
Yeah, well, there's a vacuum you can use to vacuum up water.
Oh, there is. Okay, you didn't use the regular vacuum.
No.
Okay. Well, okay, I just heard about nothing other than football. It's been horrible. There's nothing happening here except for that.
We have a small human story here in Riyadh.
Sure.
Apparently,
in what?
There
Sorry?
Is in Riyadh.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The king has donated to bring twins who are joined, I think, by the head or something, from Iraq. From to have an operation here in Riyadh to separate them.
Okay, that's good. It's
and I think the interesting part is they're from the Najaf in Iraq, which most likely means they are Shias.
Hmm.
Yeah. So.
Okay, I'm probably going to make a lot of enemies and going to sound like the most horrible person in the world, but I would think that maybe there would be a possibility that, you know, natal deformities or things like Siamese twins or things like that would have some sort of condemnation in Islam. I'm sure it's wrong, but that's where my mind goes. Somewhat.
The separation of Siamese twins?
No, not the separation, but maybe, you know, that it's horrible to say that, but it's impure or, you know, it's
oh,
not.
No.
Oh,
there's
sorry,
like
Turkey,
that.
you're silencing, you're becoming a silent. Can you turn it off and back in?
What fascinates me about conjoined twins is that with every pair that is brought into the media focus, depending on how much media focus is put on a particular pair of conjoined twins, the better the country they get to be flown to be separated. I've always been fascinated by that. How if the plight of conjoined twins who are attached at the chest really captures the hearts and minds of, you know, the U.S. on a Wednesday morning because it's on the morning shows, All of a sudden, the next thing you know, they're being taken to Baltimore to be fixed. Whereas if it doesn't, you might, you know, you and your conjoined twin sibling, you might find yourself having to be operated on in Johannesburg or what have you.
Well, that's the way the world works, isn't it? If you get enough noise and enough attention, then you're going to get better stuff than if you don't.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. It's mostly propaganda, and there is definitely someone who cares about it, who actually is doing it because he cares or something. But at the end, there's always propaganda linked to this whole process. And Saudi Arabia has been very popular in the recent couple of years, I think, or three, with separating joint Siamese twins, and we have now been ranked as one of the top experts in these operations in the Middle East.
Hmm. So you think it's propaganda giving a good name to Saudi Arabia or showing how expert they are in these things? Or
both. It's definitely propaganda. Nobody would be stupid enough to say, no, it's not propaganda. But definitely there are also people who care, because these are the people who come over, bring this the word to the king, make sure that he knows about it. And of course, the king is definitely not doing it purely for propaganda. There's other ways to do things for propaganda purely, but propaganda is a major part of this whole thing. We've already, I think they've done, this team has done, I think, I'm not sure, about 20 operations already. They've done one for a Romanian twin, an operation, I think, for an Egyptian twins, and other nationalities as well as Saudis.
You know what? Let's choose to look at it as a nice gesture from the Saudi government and put a nice spin on the end of the show to finish up to end the show on a nice note. Let's do that. Why don't we? That means that I guess the show has reached its end. Before we go, I would like to give each one of you the opportunity to tell us a little bit more about where people can find you. We've talked a little bit about Turkey's Twitter account in the show. Why don't you tell us more about that, Turkey?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My account is @Saudi. And definitely you'll find out where I'm having my coffee, where I'm having my lunch, and so on.
And your cigars. Don't forget the cigars.
And my cigars. That's the most important thing. Some nice Cuban cigars.
Excellent. Kelly, what about you?
I don't do too much online, but you can find me at twitter.com/Kishel and just find out about the little projects I've got going on and the trials and tribulations of a new military mom, wife.
you're doing graphic work. As that's your job, correct?
No. I've just finished my job because my husband just joined the Navy, so he's off. So I'm at home. I'm a stay at home mom again. But that's what I do. I do graphic art and things like that. But currently, there's no projects besides the fine Movielicious posters for the wonderful podcast. And that's about it. I just tend to ramble once I start talking.
Why? That's fine. That's why we like you. No, there are many more reasons we like you, and you might find out most of them if you go follow her on Twitter, @Kishel. You're still, you still have a locked account, don't you?
I do.
Okay. and Mr. Deluxe, by which I mean Randy.
RandyDeluxe.com. How about Twitter.com/RandyDeluxe, which actually is fed onto RandyDeluxe.com. But anyway, of course, I participate in a number of podcasts, and my favorite podcast of my life right now is FilmSec. And FilmSec is where Scott Johnson and Brian Ibbett and Brian Dunaway and I all watch a film that you may have seen, you may not have seen, you may have considered not worthy of watching, and we explain why it's worthy of watching, and at the same time, we have so much fun. It's it's the funniest experience of my life right now. And it's even funnier when I record an episode of FilmSec with the guys, and then like a week later, I listen back to that episode, and I'm laughing out loud at it. It's so strange to experience that. So of course, that's not something you could do, but you could experience something like that. You could pretend that you were experiencing that.
Don't you do it live? I guess you don't. I don't think I've ever seen the recording of the show.
I mean, we're definitely all alive while we're recording, and we're all talking at the same time.
Live, as in streaming it. Does Scott stream it?
We do not stream FilmSec live. Right. We do not.
So you definitely cannot live that through that experience twice. But you know what? If you want to have a little bit of that fun, you can go listen to that show, and you can also there's something about movie podcasts. I don't know. The Movielicious is definitely the one where I'm having the most fun. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's probably the one where I'm having the most fun out of all the ones I do. So I don't know. Movies for the win.
Both are highly recommended. I love FilmSec, and Movielicious is hilarious to listen to as well.
See, Kelly says listen to it. So listen to them, so you should.
And,
you
know, thumbs up.
I absolutely love Patrick and Nicole and Terpster, and you know that. You know how much I love you guys. So I hope you don't take it as anything but a compliment. The funniest thing on the internet about movies are the posters for every episode of Movielicious.
I absolutely agree.
Those are funny. God, those are horrifying. I have nightmares.
I just finished next week's one. Wait till you see it.
Oh, I can't wait. I sent you the picture for that one, and I'm so looking forward to see how it turned out. So you can do that too by going to, you can actually listen to all of these shows on the Frogpants Studios network site thing, because we're all part of the same network. You will find all of these shows at frogpants.com, which is the network that Scott is building, the empire, should I say. And if you're not that much into movie, you might want to go listen to Sword and Laser, the show from Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont about, it's their little science fiction book club, basically. So you can also go listen to that.
And maybe you should catch up with your recommendations for apps, for App Slappy.
For example, yes, I could be better at that. I have missed a couple of shows in the past month. But, you know, I have to take the time to play with my iPhone 4, which you don't have. That's the reason why.
Are we talking about that now?
I'm sorry, Randy?
I said, no, we don't. I don't have an iPhone 4. I want one, but I don't have one.
You know what? You know what is the nicest thing about the iPhone 4? I will tell you. Once we all have iPhone 4s, we can use FaceTime to call each other's for free. Once we're on, you know, when we're in our houses, it's Wi-Fi for free. And we don't have to log into Skype or anything. We can just call from the phone. It's fantastic. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/notpatrick. And you can follow us on the show's blog at thephileasclub.com. That's going to be it for us once again. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you guys for being on the show. It was a blast as usual. And we will talk to you again in a month for show number 27. I think so. We'll see that once we're there. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.